know, Don said that he thought it was a word for us and a word for me, definitely. And, you know, I had a little, just a brief texting deal with him this morning saying I think it needed to gel a little bit for me to really get a hold of it. You know, this is, February has been Black History Month in the United States. I don't remember how long it's been that we've been setting aside the month of February to look specifically at Black history. And as the Vineyard Church of the Peninsula, one of the things that we started to focus on, aside from the poverty and schools and it's looking at racial reconciliation. And that's part of the Vineyard DNA, and that's part of the Vineyard, part of our movement is to look for those places where we can be reconciled with all nations, with all races, with all ethnicities, to be able to get along. And I'm not going to get political at all, but I look on Facebook, and primarily I'm on Instagram now. And I'll scroll through and I'll see a lot of different memes. And there was one in particular that I saw at the beginning of this month that really moved me. And I generally will take the time when I see a meme like this, I will go and look up, you know, I'll get out the Googler or the DuckDuckGo or some other search engine, and I will look to see if the meme has any validity. If what was said was actually said, if who the quotation is attributed to is really the person that it should be attributed to. And so I took this particular one, and the gentleman's picture was there, and this beautiful, what we're going to fill in our blanks with, was there. And these are 8 simple rules to live by from a professor to his student. And the man that we're going to talk about was born into slavery sometime around 1860. They're not sure, because when slaves were born, they didn't keep records, necessarily. So it was sometime between 1860 and 1864 when this young child was born. And he had brothers and sisters. There's conflicting stories as to whether or not they knew who his father was. He never knew his father, his biological father. And when he was still an infant, he, his sister, his mother were kidnapped and taken from, I believe it's Missouri. Yeah, they were taken from Missouri into Kentucky. And the owners, I hate to say that, the slave owners, hired up an investigator who went out and found, all he was able to find was the young boy, the infant boy. And he bought him back for the price of a racehorse. I don't know what that was and what that would equate, but that's what the literature says, is that he was ransomed for the price of a racehorse in that time. And I guess that would make sense because Kentucky is known for horse racing, yeah. Right? After the Civil War, after slavery was abolished, this young boy now was free. For all intents and purposes, he had been set free. Once a slave receives his freedom. This young boy was inquisitive. He had an inquisitive heart, an inquisitive spirit, and he would spend many, many hours in the forest around his home in Missouri. And he would look at the flowers and the bugs and the birds and the trees and everything that was there in nature. And he would look at this stuff intently and examine it. And at some point in his life, he began to draw pictures of them. And he began to care for these things. He would take mushrooms and he would take little cuttings from plants. And he would take them and he would plant them elsewhere and care for them and nurture them and watch them grow. He would have had what we might call a green thumb, you know. He was very good. And people around the area began to hear about this young boy and would call him the plant man. Because if they had a plant, if they had something going on that they couldn't take care of, they would bring it to him. And he would put it in his little nursery and take care of it and bring it back to health. As he grew older, another part of the story is the owners of this young boy and his sister and his brothers effectively adopted them once they had been set free and raised them as their very own sons and daughters. loved them, taught them, and helped to arrange for this young boy to go to high school. Now, he couldn't go to any school in the area because they were for whites only. So he had to go to a high school that was about 75 miles away where he was accepted. And it was somewhere, I think it was also in Missouri. No, it was in Kansas. It was in Kansas City, Kansas, where he went to high school. And after about 2 years, he received a certificate of graduation. But he was encouraged to go for a higher education. So he started to apply at different colleges, different universities in that area. And he had been accepted. He'd been accepted at one and, you know, received his letter of acceptance. They liked his grades and the fact that he was, you know, a good student and all. But when he got there to actually enroll, they said, "Oh, we're sorry. You're black. We don't accept Negroes here. You can't come to this place." And so he went on and kept on applying. Here's a young man at this point who was born into slavery. Born as a slave, yet spent time on his own, spending time in creation. When he was not allowed to go to a white high school, they made a way for him to go find another school where he could learn. Mm-hmm. Learn how to read, how to write, how to apply what he was learning and put it down. Learn how to communicate. He was given these opportunities. When he applied at another at a college or university where he couldn't go, rather than retreating back in and becoming, letting anger get a hold of him, he kept on beating down the doors. He kept moving forward. He didn't say, "Woe is me, I was born a slave, I can't do anything, I can't go anywhere." He kept moving forward. At this point, when he was accepted at this other college, they say that he witnessed a lynching. You know, he actually saw. He actually saw a lynching. I've seen photographs of, I mean, we've probably all seen these things, these images. But it broke his heart. And again, rather than make him so angry that he went within himself and sought out some kind of revenge, he chose to love. When he would spend time in the woods, he would pray. He would say, "Yeah. Creator, show me these things. Show me, help me have sense. Help me have understanding about these planets and these animals and how they work." Kind of like these quantum physicians.
The mechanics.
Yeah, quantum mechanics, as they fix the quantums. They, those who are believers, like Brian is, ask for wisdom. They realize, you know what you don't know. And you say, "Lord, give me wisdom to be able to understand these things, at least a glimpse, just a smidgen more than what I understand now." And that's where this young man was. He went to college, and while he was going to school to pay for it, he became a homesteader. And I believe it was in like one of those mud huts, mud with the thatch kind of roof that he was staying in. And it was a white landowner, and he was homesteading, and he was treated poorly, you know, ripped off, obviously. And he began to paint. He had been a painter and a drawer. When he went to college, he was going for art. He wanted to be an artist. But because of his experience with plants, his teachers, his instructors, the professors there encouraged him to move over into botany. And so he did, with their encouragement. He received his bachelor's degree. He was encouraged to stay on to receive his master's. So he did. A slave. Hit with all sorts of obstacles, negativity, how he had been treated, primarily by whites, how he had been treated, yet he continued to love. When he was going to sell a property. He tried to keep this property where he was homesteading, but the landowner said, no, you can't. You're not going to, you can't have this. I'll help you move your house. But it was a prime piece of real estate, I guess. And they couldn't work out a price. And the man said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll buy your painting. And he said, no, it's not for sale. And you know what he did? He says that he gave this guy, he gave the painting. I can't accept it. No, you have to accept it. It's a gift. So here was somebody who really had this love of God in his heart, in this, through his whole life, had this inquisitiveness, had this spirit of a child, wanting to learn, wanting to grow, wanting to get everything that he could. And shortly after he received his master's degree, he was contacted by another man by the name of Booker T. Washington, who was working down there at Tuskegee, the African American Institute in Tuskegee. And he asked this young George Washington Carver if he would come and be a professor and head up their botany department, their agriculture department. So he went down there. It wasn't all that Booker T. had made it out to be. But he worked with what he had. He was probably the first green professor. And what he did is he would take old bottles and somehow cut them and make them into beakers and test tubes. And he would use anything that he could find. He would use it and build his laboratory. And the students, he would encourage them. And there's one story that I had heard, because I was listening to several different podcasts the week before. One thing that he did is he took the students out to this swampy area. And he said, I want you to get all of this stuff off the top. And they're like, what? Yes, we're going to get all this stuff off the top. And they took it to this plot of ground over Tuskegee and laid it out. And it acted as a fertilizer. This was a guy who went in and he said, you know what, we need to do crop rotation. You guys are growing cotton. That's all you're growing. We need to grow other things. And so he began to experiment. Wow. And he learned that the soil would not be depleted of nutrients if he rotated crops. We'll grow corn here one season. We'll grow watermelons. I didn't mean to say it like that, but we'll grow cotton and peanuts. He was famous for peanuts. He did not invent peanut butter. That had come out, I found out that had come out 100 years or so earlier. But he did discover some 300-odd uses for the peanut. And eventually he began to be called Mr. Peanut, but that was a few years later in his life. And he, not the same Mr. Peanut, I don't think.
But Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, yeah. He put together, I can't remember what it was called, he put together this wagon full of his experiments and fertilizers and information, and he would go from farm to farm and teach the farmers there so that they could have better crops. All these young black farmers, these former slaves, sons and daughters of slaves, giving them this stuff for free, passing on everything that he knew and everything that he had learned and passing it on for free. This guy He was approached by Theodore Roosevelt to help with the Department of Agriculture. And there's another story that we'll get into just a little bit more, this offshoot of who he influenced in his life. You know, the Bible says, and I've shared this many, many times, we know it, show me a man diligent in his work and he will stand before kings. That's in the Proverbs. If we are diligent in what God has given us to do, regardless of the obstacles, regardless of the problems that come up, and we are consistent and we look to Him for His grace and mercy and His strength to move forward, if we are diligent, we stand before kings. And that doesn't necessarily mean political people. It doesn't necessarily mean world famous people. We stand before one another. And y'all are kings and queens, you know? Not that kind of queens. Just Anna would laugh. She would know what I'm talking about. So, in jump ahead in a few years, he had done all of these experiments with peanuts, and there was a tariff that had been coming up, and he went to go speak before Congress. Now, when he went, they said that it's not unfounded, but there's not a lot of evidence that it actually happened, but this guy believes it did, just knowing the times and having read other accounts of similar events. He was asked to come speak to Congress in 1921. A Senate hearing, it was the House Ways and Means Committee in 1921. He went before them. He was given 10 minutes to speak, and when he was done with the 10 minutes, they encouraged him to speak, and he wound up talking for about 90 minutes and gave them everything he could. Now, the Southern representatives were mocking him when he first went in and calling him racial epithets, making fun of him. He shouldn't be there. Get him out of here. But he persisted. He went forth, and he did what he was supposed to do. And because of everything that he said there, for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they changed the tariffs with peanuts and how things worked so that the Southern farmer wasn't losing money. And they started to have this thing where, you know what, we need to start rotating our crops over the whole country.
Right.
Taking, being wise, having wise farming. And it didn't just affect people in the United States. I read at one point that there were people from China who were contacting him. He was the first black man, the first African-American man to receive a medal from the United Kingdom for his work. Just, he was honored by several different people. After he spoke in 1921, about 20 years later, give or take, when was FDR elected? There had been a young man when he was in school in Iowa. He was at the University of Iowa. That was where he received his bachelor's degree and his master's degree. It was the University of Iowa. He had met a young boy, and he spent time with this young boy, teaching him, training him. That young man, whose name escapes me, was Henry
Wallace, maybe?
That might be. I'm not sure. I've got it somewhere in here. Maybe it's here right quick. Yeah, Henry Wallace. How did you know? He was from Mark.
We live in Des Moines.
That's right, yeah. It was Henry Wallace. And that man became the Secretary of Agriculture. And then he was selected as FDR's vice president. So here's this slave who grows up to influence someone who would have an important place in the United States government, to be a secretary in the cabinet of a president, and then soon to serve as a vice president. George Washington Carver had a relationship with Henry Ford. Well, Henry Ford, he was anti-Semitic and apparently a white supremacist and all. Well, he had this relationship with George Washington Carver. He actually invited him up. And the things that Henry Ford wanted to do, like he said, we're not going to have gasoline forever. And he started working with ethanol. And he worked with George Washington Carver, who had invented, took the peanut and made it into plastics, the beginnings of plastics. He made it into face creams and shaving creams I can't list them all. There's like 300.
Mm.
You look this stuff up and it's like, holy moly, this guy did a lot of work with this stuff. Breaking it down and looking at it. And they actually made a plastic out of soybean. Back Henry Ford, they made a body of a car out of plastics made from soybean. Mm. So 1940s already. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And then with his help, with Henry Ford, with the help of George Washington Carver, they were able, because of World War II, rubber was needed for the war effort. So there was no no longer an influx or an import of natural rubber, so they needed to come up with something synthetic so that cars could still run and we could still move on in the war effort. So they made a synthetic rubber. I want to say it was out of goldenrod, out of a weed. They were able to go through and make this synthetic rubber. You can look all this stuff up on them interwebs. Here we go. 8 simple rules to live by from a professor to a student. And this will go fairly quick. I'm going to read the letter. This letter came from one of George Washington Carver's students when he was a professor in Tuskegee in 1922. He wrote a thank you note. He would take time. When anybody wrote to him, he would take the time to write back. When they asked him questions, he would answer the questions. He was a man who was willing to give of himself. So this young student had given Robinson a Christmas present. So GWC wrote back. He said, "Mr. L. Robinson, I wish to express through you to each member of the senior class my deep appreciation for the fountain pen you so kindly and thoughtfully gave me Christmas. This gift, like all the others, is characterized by simplicity and thoughtfulness, which I hope each member will make the slogan of their lives." Simple and thoughtful. Make that the slogan in your life. To be simple and thoughtful. We don't have to be this grandiose pomp and circumstance, just simple and thoughtful.
Yes.
You know, that old idea is it's the thought that counts. Not to be cheap, necessarily, but to really put thought into it. He said, as your father, this is really cool. He became more than just a professor to these students. He acted like one who he had never had in his own life, save for those former owners who, for whatever reason, sought to, out of guilt, out of compassion, out of love, out of a change of heart, a repentant heart for having been slave owners, chose to raise these boys and girls as their own. He said, "As your father, it is needless for me to keep saying, I hope, except for emphasis, that each one of my children will rise to the full height of your possibilities, which means the possession of these 8 cardinal virtues, which constitutes a lady or a gentleman." As your father, it is needless for me to keep saying, I hope, except for emphasis. Like, I'm going to keep on saying this. I'm going to keep on saying this. You know, we've all had things that either teachers or moms or dads or people who were influential in our lives kept on saying, you know, make your bed. Make your bed. Clean up your room. You know, did Johnny do it? Or, you know, just because Johnny did it, don't mean you have to do it. Different things that we've heard. It's amazing how many times I hear my dad's voice in my head. Things that he told me. And then I'm saying them as well. But he said, he wanted each one of his children to rise to the height of their possibilities. That's what God wants for us, that we would rise to the height of our possibilities, to keep moving forward.
Yes.
The first one is be clean. Be clean, both inside and outside. In Matthew 23, verse 25, Jesus said, "Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are full of robbery and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the dish so that the outside of it may become clean." He told his kids, be clean, both inside and outside. I'm not always there. I'm not always clean inside and outside. I'm definitely not clean outside when I get home from work. Tammy can attest to that. Stay away from me, I smell. She goes, yeah, you do. The second thing is that he told his kids to be those who neither looks up to the rich or down to the poor.
Yeah.
Neither look up to the rich or down on the poor. A lot of times we might look at, you know, the grass on the other side of the fence and say, oh, wow, look at that. Wouldn't that be great? Sometimes there's jealousy, and we say we need to abolish billionaires instead of saying, you know what? I'd like to work hard, and if it's God's will to achieve, to move forward and to achieve, he's given each of us, the Bible says, the ability to create wealth. He's given us our hand, whatever we have. We, you know, I remember listening to one of those more motivational speakers. And he said, at one point, you know, you have to write down the assets that you have. And he was talking with someone who had just moved to the United States. And, well, what are your assets? Well, I don't have any. And it's like, well, you speak English. Yeah. Can you write? Yes. You know, different things. Can you add, subtract, multiply, and divide? Yes. Okay, those are your assets. Let's find out what else you can do. So we don't look up to the rich as it to say, oh, wow, look at that. Mm. Wow, they're so wonderful. They're so beautiful. Look at all they have. Look at all they own. I wish I could do that. I wish, and become jealous and envious. But neither do we look down on the poor, those who have less than we do, for whatever reason. For whatever reason.
Yes.
Now, this guy, George Washington Carver, obviously born with nothing. He was owned by someone. Yet he moved forward. And I think they said he was buried in his $2 suit. He would always buy cheap clothes. Just frumpy, cheap. Anyway, from James chapter 2, James, the brother of Jesus, said, my brothers, do not hold your faith and our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes and say, you sit here in a good place. And you say to the poor man, you stand over there or sit down by my feet. Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? And I don't think that's something that I've seen at the Vineyard. You know, people are treated equally, you know. And my gosh, we come from all different walks of life, you know.
Right.
And but the Lord looks. And I remember hearing one time, you know, if you look at a photograph like New York City or Chicago, an aerial, you see all the skyscrapers. And if you're looking down, it might be difficult to tell which ones are higher and which ones are lower. It's not until you get down and you take this other vantage point, you know, this where you say, oh, wow, they're all different heights and widths and all that. But the Lord sees us like this. He sees us as all, we're just his kids. He doesn't judge. In fact, he sees us and hopefully he sees his son. More and more. The third one, he told his kids, lose. Lose, if need be, without squealing. Lose without squealing.
Yeah, that's good.
It's okay. It's okay to lose. You know? Sometimes we just have to admit it. Say, you know what, I lost. Okay. You know, we learn more from loss a lot of times than we do from winning. I hear, you know, you hear that a lot in sports, you know, constantly. You'll hear a lot of it today during that Daytona 500 race that'll be going on when they drive in circles. Everybody drives left for about 3.5 hours, going 500 miles in place. The guys that crash out, or the guys that run all the way up front all day long, and then at the last moment, you know, you see there's a blown tire, they run out of gas. So you know what? We learned a lot for next time. You learn a lot from the loss. Everyone who loses needs to be without squealing. 1 Corinthians 9. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I will not disqualify myself. This attitude that Paul is telling the Corinthians. And the Corinthians in Corinth, it was a place where there was a lot of trade that went on. I did a comparison study many years ago on Corinth compared to the city of Las Vegas. And how they were so comparable. There were a lot of sporting events that took place in Corinth. And so that's one of the reasons why Paul brings this up. But what I get from that is we run as if to win the prize, only competing with ourselves,
yeah.
Not with others. So when we come in life and we try, but we lose, the few businesses that Danny and I have had that have all failed, we learn. You learn from that. And then sometimes you go, you know what? We're just not made out at this point in time to run a business. It's not the time or the place. A lot of times timing and place is everything, that sort of thing. So we lose without squealing. And of course the converse, he says win without bragging. And sometimes that's hard, you know. Win without bragging. Proverbs 27:2 says, let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. Mm-hmm. You know, do the best you can and say, yeah, I won. Took a lot of hard work. You know, we've probably all heard the quotation from Wayne Gretzky, I never missed a shot I didn't take. There's others who've been attributed, you know, they've attributed that quote to them. I never missed a shot I didn't take. You hear about guy, you know, in my day of watching basketball, Michael Jordan just shooting free throws again and again and again and again and again and going different places of the court and just standing in the same spot and doing drills. You know, guys playing baseball, doing drills, always at the field. Man, I can see his face, but I can't. Cal Ripken Jr., always at the field. Always there. Always working. Always trying. We see the championship. We see a kid like Tiger Woods come up and win everything.
Yeah.
You know, maybe his dad was a little bit mean, kind of like Andre Agassi's dad was kind of mean in the training. But going through these drills, practicing over, over, over again. That's what makes them the champions that they are. Takes a lot of hard work. So be one who wins without bragging. Like I just walked in and I was a natural.
Okay.
You know, look how well I did. I did so good. I'm better than y'all. No. The fifth one real quick. Be one who is always considerate. Always be considerate of women, children, and older people. Elders. Always be considerate of women, children, and older people. James, again, in chapter 1, said, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world.
Yeah.
Paul tells different churches how we're to treat men, women, children, those who are younger, those who are older. And it's always with respect and love. Always. We're never to look down because someone is young. In fact, he told Timothy, don't let anyone look down on you because you're young.
Right.
Doesn't mean that he was supposed to be cocky. It just meant, you know what? God has called me. My father Paul over here has given me what, you know, has told me all these things and has taught me. I'm just going to keep on moving forward. Kind of like GWC. You know, he's telling his kids these things so that nobody looks down on them because they're poor or whatever their lot in life.
Right.
Number six, be too brave to lie. Be too brave to lie. You know, if when we get caught, you know, yeah, well, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. You know, no, officer, yeah, I had a cramp in my leg and the foot went down, or I think my throttle got stuck, or, you know, my tire was a little bit funny, and, you know, that's whatever. You know, lying. Don't be too brave to lie. Tell the truth, even if it hurts. For the time, this is 2 Timothy chapter 4. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires, and will turn away their ears from the truth, and will turn aside to myths. But you be sober in all things, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. That's basically the same thing that George Washington Carver was telling this student here. Fulfill your ministry, do the work of an evangelist. This accumulating teachers in accordance with their own desires, if you see where we are right now as a culture, as a society, in the Western world primarily, but in this entire world, and especially where we are right now in the United States, with abortion issues, with gender identity issues, with there are some 90-some-odd genders that we don't raise children with he or she, boy or girl. We let them decide when they're older. We're in this place now where we, in universities and colleges, where a kid could go in with some knowledge of the Bible and heads on straight and then be taught by college professors who aren't looking for the truth, but who are just espousing their own personal agendas. And so we see a nation screwing up in a lot of ways.
Yep.
But it's the times that we're in. It's the times that you and I need to be looking more to Jesus Christ and encourage each other. Number seven, be too generous to cheat. Be too generous to cheat. You know, give. Give freely. Freely we have received, freely give. 1 Timothy chapter 6, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited, or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. So we don't have to look at the stock market. You know, well, I better go back in there and see what my 401k is doing. You know, it's like, just leave it there. Don't change it every day. You know, don't go, well, should I be aggressive? No, I need to go back and be conservative over here. Well, I'll open this. Okay, let me buy this. No, sell, buy, sell. Now we've got all these apps on our phones where we can buy and sell and be day traders. You know, on penny stocks and real, you know, real stocks. And, you know, what is it? Acorn and Robinhood and various different trading apps that we can go into and put in our bank number and then just start buying and selling, buying and selling, buying and selling.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the stock market just going, you know, raise, down, 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 raise, you know. I think it has a lot to do with all of the ignorant folks out there not buying and letting it sit. But that's just my opinion. The last one, number eight. This is a good one. Take your share of the world and let others have theirs. Take your share of the world and let others have theirs.
Yeah.
Matthew 7 says, In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the law and the prophets. Don't hold people back. I don't want people to hold you back.
Right.
So don't hold people back. Encourage. Don't call people names, you know. It's real simple. Move forward. So after all of that, George Washington Carver closes out his letter. And he says, may God help you to carry out these 8 cardinal virtues, and peace and prosperity be yours through life. May God help you to carry out these 8 cardinal virtues, and peace and prosperity be yours through life. He really was acting like a father to these kids. He wasn't just acting. He really was. He really was a father to these kids. And we can see a lot of good stuff that has come out of Tuskegee. Primarily because of him, I believe. Lovingly yours, G.W. Carver. So, Father, these 8 cardinal virtues, these 8 important things that Professor Carver passed on to his kids, his students, I pray that they could be ours, that they would be something that we emulate. Someone who grew up with every obstacle, who grew up in a time of unspeakable horrors that were taking place as this country was torn apart. Some who wanted to see all men freed, and some who wanted to keep people bound and home. This man who chose to do good, this man who chose to love, this man who spent time in the woods and said, oh, Creator, will you show me? Will you give me understanding? Will you teach me of your creation? One who painted these things, one who became a singer in a church choir, one who taught piano, one who taught art, one who became one of the world's leading botanists, one who spoke before Congress, who had influence in this nation. One who worked diligently in this life, who stood before kings, who left an enduring impact. One who I believe chose to live more like you, Jesus. So could we take that on as ourselves, Lord, that we would be a people who are clean both inside and outside, that we would treat others fairly, yeah, with equity, not giving honor to one and dishonor to another. Could we be those who lose gracefully without squealing? Could we be those who win and achieve without bragging? Help us to be considerate of others. No matter gender, race, age, just to be a person who is considerate of others. Help us not to have a forked tongue. But to be too brave to lie, to be too generous to cheat. Give us the courage to take our share of the world, everything that you've laid out for us. Help us not to be intimidated, but to move forward with all that the Holy Spirit has for us. And let us not stand in the way of what you have for others, but help us to encourage them, to lift them up, to build them up, that they might reach their full potential as well. Because we're stronger when we work together rather than fight each other. Something that just real quick that came to me about number 7, be too generous to cheat. That word generous, we've studied it in the past. And the first 4 letters of that word is the root, gene. Generous. It's related to the word Genesis, the beginning. God is a generous God. It has to, Genesis, beginning, the seminal part. God is generous. He's where everything comes from. He's where we come from, made in His image, made by His hand. There's a lot in there. I would encourage you to look, do a study on that word generous. God is generous, and He's called us to be the same. So I just encourage you to do a study on that word. I think you'd really like it. Being a scientist and all. So, anyway, comments, questions? God speak to anybody? Say anything? Do anything? Huh? Nothing?
That's very good.
So you're very good.